only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, second half, or in this case, hour and 10 minutes, give or take. And Andy Serling of the New York Racing Association. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. You're going to be disappointed in me, though.
No, I usually am, so.
I knew that was coming. I had Kenny McPeak, and I brought up Classic Causeway, and I forgot, as he was talking about what might be next, which included some far-flung options, I had forgot to say to him that he should think about turning him back on the dirt and
taking that shot. He's not going to do that.
So. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I hate to say it, but there's I'm never going to win this argument, but there might be an argument at the end of the day that winning the Belmont Derby was not the best thing that ever happened. But we'll see.
That's an interesting. That's funny. That's an interesting perspective.
I mean, it's extremely clear that he's never going to be successful in races of any distance if he couldn't be at all effective in certainly a sort of mediocre race. We ran Aqueduct recently at a mile and a half. I don't know what scenario he's going to have. He's going to be successful in these races, but. Listen, I didn't like him in the Belmont Derby, so I guess I'll be wrong the rest of my life about him, you know. Whatever. Anyway, what else?
No, I just
about the same horse. It's boring.
You know? I hear you. He acknowledged that the distance was long and it was too long for him, and I that should have triggered my thought process.
Races he's running on the turf versus dirt. I didn't realize he's a better dirt horse. Just because he won the turf. He did won the turf at a mile and a quarter. I don't think that means he's not a 7 furlong to a mile dirt horse, but what do I know?
Well, you know plenty, and you're usually, when it comes to this particular gambit, you got a pretty good track record.
Yeah, Cigar ran reasonably well in those turf races, didn't win them.
That's right. There's a good. There you go. There you go.
He had some pretty good figures in some turf races. Anyway, certainly there must be something more interesting to talk about than our weekly few minutes on Classic Causeway.
Have we? I don't necessarily think that we've spent all that much time on it.
Seems like it.
Well, then let's. I did not actually get much of a chance to talk New York yet yesterday or today. We were kind of focused on what went on in Philly, and I certainly want your opinion on that, on those results.
They're not very interesting.
Your opinions on the results or the results
in Philly,
themselves?
In Philly, I don't know. What's the say?
Well, let me ask you this, because it's going to get worked to death over the next couple of months or next 6 weeks. What are the factors that you think should be weighed most heavily determining the 3-year-old champion at this point?
Well, you know, it's a reasonable question, and I don't have a particularly strong opinion on these things, on this. I understand why Epicenter is considered the leader at this point. I think the Travers win does hold a huge amount. I mean, you couple it with running second in the Derby and Preakness and having run well in both those races, I think that the argument for him is a very reasonable one. And I think the argument is the best three-year-old dirt horse, at least going long. I think everybody needs to take a step back and realize that Jack Christopher always has to be in this discussion. Because he won shorter races doesn't make him an unviable candidate. He's not going to win it. But I think at this point, it's Epicenter, Taba, and some combination of Cyberknife and Jack Christopher, depending on how you look at it. And I need to watch the Best Rated Derby again, because I think Cyberknife did have trouble in that race, so I do want to watch it again. But I don't really want to watch it again, but I guess I have to watch it to evaluate him. I think that the reason that Taba isn't discussed as much as Epicenter is the Bob Baffert situation. And I think to somehow decide that that makes Taba a less worthy three-year-old of the year, just as Medina Spirit wasn't given his fair due last year because of Baffert. And listen, I guess, you know, people can say fairly he was disqualified from the Derby, and that's very fair. But he hadn't been disqualified, I think, when the Eclipse Awards came out. And in reality, I think that's ridiculous. Taba's an exceptional horse. And to be fair, he wasn't allowed to compete in the Travers, or he would have been there, I would think. So I don't think it's fair to say that Epicenter is the runaway leader of this division, because in your heart you have some bias against Bob Baffert. If you genuinely, objectively attached to a lie detector test, believe that Epicenter is more deserving to do, that's fine. And I'm not saying he's not, because there's an argument that he is. But I think there's a very fair argument that right now these two are very much on par. I mean, Epicenter has one grade, one win. I don't disagree. His second place finish in the two World Crown races counts for a lot. And winning the Jim Dandy counts for a lot. So I'm not, and his Travers win was decisive. But I think it's at least fair to say that Taba is in the conversation. And at this point, they're both headed towards the Breeders' Cup Classic. And I know everybody thinks Fait Accompli, if Flight Line's going to win. I think Flight Line's a very likely winner of that race, so I'd love to book him at 2-5 or 3-5, because it's not going to be shorter than that anyway, assuming they all run. And assuming Life is Good does run in there, and he's not running in the mile, Steve, because that's waving the white flag. They should retire. They'll retire before they run him in the mile again. That's just saying we're not good enough to beat Flight Line, so we're going to run a lesser race, a race that, in my opinion, they should do away with anyway. But I think you'll see him pointing towards the Classic, and I hope he runs. He's going to present a situation for Flight Line that's a lot different than what he faced in the Breeders' Cup, in the Pacific Classic. And I think people need to get some perspective, and I'm not knocking Flight Line. He's a tremendous horse, and what he did the other day was, without question, a jaw-dropping, you know, lifetime kind of incredible performance to watch. But Arrogate did the same thing in the Travers. I mean, I saw it live, and it was stunning, and legitimately stunning. And he ran a 124 buyer, so he ran a comparable figure. And he came back and ran a very similar figure in the Classic, I think 120, and he won by a half length because the competition was sterner. You know, there went with Gentlemen and Skipaway and Will's Way and Formal Gold. Some of those races were running those 125s, 126s. They were in photos together because they were all good. And I don't think that Flight Line's going to show him to be as good as Flight Line based on his last race, but he's still very, very good, and he also has a significant amount of stamina. So it's not as though Flight Line is going to toy with him the way he, you know, laughed off the competition out of Del Mar. And even if he's the better of the two horses, I think Life is Good is going to challenge him enough that horses like Cave and Epicenter can make runs out of the end. Do I think he's not the likeliest winner? Of course he is the likeliest winner, Flight Line. But it's not going to be some sort of, you know, repeat performance of what we saw at Del Mar. He might run the same figure or a similar figure, but he's not going to win it by as much. Because these are really good horses we're talking about. It's a tough year to be an okay three-year-old, because Taba and Epicenter are really, really good. And I don't think Cyberknife's any kind of bum either, to be honest with you. I think he's pretty good, too. And getting better. They're all getting better. So it's an interesting analysis. And at the end of the day, I think if whoever finishes, let's say Flight Line wins the Breeders' Cup Classic, but one of the three-year-olds finishes second. I think if it's, you know, between Taba and Epicenter, the one who finishes second probably should be three-year-old champion, in my opinion. But I think because of the incredible backlash against Bob Baffert, whether fair or unfair, in my opinion, I think it's unfair to be holding it against the horses he's running. I don't understand that. I mean, to suggest that Bob Baffert has achieved a lifetime of success because he's some sort of chemical wizard is just buffoonery. It's not true. This guy's a terrific trainer who's gotten terrific horses. He's also done some things that are detrimental to his career and to horse racing. And I think he deserves punishment for some of that stuff. But I don't think that that mitigates the fact that Tava is a really good horse. I mean, does that make sense? Is that fair?
Of course. Of course it does. Of course it does. And then, you know, the people that basically are decrying every Baffert winner here in recent months, including the Del Mar, you know, 2-year-olds and such. It's just bizarre.
What's his name? I'm terrible. Cash something.
Cave Rock.
Cave Rock. Sorry, I'm the worst. I remember horses from 40 years ago like it was yesterday, and from 40 minutes ago like it was 100 years ago. getting old. This is a really good horse. And he's a really good trainer. I think these things are getting... And I think a lot of it's because of social media and the irresponsible things that become narratives because reckless people with unqualified opinions say things on social media too often. And this is a truism in life. It's just going to happen in horse racing too, but it happens in all over the place, particularly in politics and other situations.
You're absolutely just saying, you know, what I'm sure plenty of people recognize. And Gary Young was with us yesterday, and we were with Gary in Philly on Saturday. And Gary, you know, Gary brought it up very distinctly. I mean, that with Medina and, you know, being in that same position, and that if this horse runs, if Tabo happens to run second to, and even I even asked Steve Asmussen earlier this morning.
And I say this with a world of respect for Gary Young. He has a position where he's involved with the owner and the connections, so his opinion,
sure.
And I have a world of respect for him. He's, you know, and as do many people whose opinions I respect, and I don't know enough about Gary. And I will say that his face and his reaction to Maggie when she asked about the Breeders' Cup Classic on our show was one of the highlights of the year for me. He was really, really funny. I don't know if people have seen it around the hour and 45-minute mark of our show on Saturday. He was really, really funny when she asked him. And he said, well, you know, there are a couple good horses in that race. He was pretty funny. I think that even though Gary obviously has a, you know, relationship with those people, he's also right. So, you know, just whatever. I'm not, you know, it's a long conversation.
Well, Steve Asmussen too. I mean, Steve said the same thing. Steve said he's of the opinion that assuming Flightline, you know, runs the kind of race that's being anticipated and a winning race, he said whoever finishes second should be 3-year-old champion. He said that 2 hours ago.
He's not an idiot. These are good horses. And I think instead of getting involved in that conversation, we just say they're good horses, you know. And he obviously is very impressive. The Fiberknife's a really good horse, too. I don't want to leave him out of the discussion. He's really gotten better.
He's not coming.
He's a really nice 3-year-old. There's, you know, leading up to the Travers and Arrogate, Zandon would have done very, very well against those horses in Triple Crown races, you know, Nyquist in the world. This sometimes just depends the year you were born. You probably would have won. You probably would have done well in the Triple Crown races last year. You know.
In the meantime, you look at his resume. I mean, that's a very good season. There's nothing wrong with hitting the boards in all those races.
I wonder if Chad is considering cutting him back in the cigar mile.
Maybe. I mean, I could see that too, but at the same time.
After Connect Be Gunrunner, he did it with him. successfully. Steve, you got me for a maximum of 10 more minutes, so if you have any other pressing questions, we should get to them.
All right. Any opinion on the Philly race?
No. A whole lot of horses failed to show up completely. A whole lot of horses failed to show up completely, and the winner reproduced her big figure at Charlestown. I will be far more impressed, with all due respect, to society when she runs an impressive race outside of Charlestown or Parks, and not a Mountaineer or Penn National.
Well, Steve Asmussen's he likes where she is, and he thinks she'll be even better.
More good horses, the better. But I'll believe it in big races when they're running tracks where I don't take the results there sometimes with a grain of salt when the horses show up in New York. And I can't believe I'm the only one who feels.
Well, the point that he made that is most germane is...
Well, I don't know if it's most germane, but it may be germane.
That's true, too. That these gun runners, he said, expect them to keep improving with maturity when they show the kind of development on the timing that he did. And he said she's going to be a terrific four-year-old, and that, you know, he's more excited about that than anything.
Okay, I hope so. I do. I'm not...
Yeah.
But I'll take a wait-and-see approach.
There you go. Let's touch on Saturday at Aqueduct, Andy. And there was one thing, I mean, before we talk about the stakes, I do want to mention the Pick 6 carryover, which notably I thought paid very well for three favorites, a second choice, and two fourth choices that weren't impossible.
You'll have to remind me who they were. Feels like a long time.
Here, I'll run them down real quick.
My mind is overclouded and exhausted by last week. Last week was an exhausting week with all these late posts to Churchill and all that nonsense.
That's true. It started with the maiden winner, that Nigurak of Grand Motion.
Yeah, that was the lead. That was a very, very good buy by the Sal crew and others. That horse had gotten about as preposterously bad a ride in Indiana Downs from my old friend Abel Escano.
Abel Escano?
He was riding that horse style last time. And then Manny goes to Lee with him. He runs a big figure. And that was a very, very good buy. That's a nice horse.
This out of a Zamindar mare. Feels like this was a score. And Matiket, Little Red Feather, and Bill Strauss are involved.
It's a Lee.
It's
a Lee. Right? Lee's the dam, right?
Yes. Sorry.
Then
came Letty, who won in a romp at 2-1.
Right. Well, Letty had been a big workout horse. I picked him second, and then Nick told me in the morning he was a big workout horse, and that's when I was not that lucky there, and he galloped. No, now I remember, right? I think I had, like, two of them on top and four of them my second choices. What did it pay?
It paid $3,500.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I like it when it pays relatively small.
Yes. I mean, that was good.
Well, I mean, I think you're going to get exaggerated payoffs in a lot of these things when logical horses win because, you know, there's too many people out there preaching that you're supposed to leave logical horses out of multi-race sequences. That's how you make money.
Well, the other favorites, you had a couple of city favorites, right? Celestial City and City Man, and
Celestial City.
Celestial City was the Shug, Janny.
Oh yeah, yeah, her, right. Yeah, her, yeah.
That was an exciting race with Dancing with the Stars.
Mm-hmm. Right, who won the last race?
The last race was the favorite, Capital Gal for George with Herman Harkey.
Gave that horse a much better ride than the prior rider. Let it take off to go to the Meadowlands. That horse has gotten some ride in this last race. Wow.
Maiden claimers.
Heeman Arkey, that was a very good ride. Unlike
good
the prior
for him. And should also mention, because people just like to remind it, Naira has always been aggressive, or at least, you know, very... cognizant when a horse deserves to be recognized as a you know, as a non-starter. And bar 14
that was declared a strange situation. That was a strange situation because that horse created the problem by breaking through the gate early, right?
Right.
And then the gate swung back at the horse. But I'm not getting involved in what I don't know exactly what the rules are on those things. I'm not getting involved in whether it's right or wrong decisions made. No upside for me, especially I don't know exactly what the rules are. But I will say that horse broke the gate early. That's for sure.
Yes. Yeah. He was jumping around. He got fractious.
Okay, but he broke the gate early.
No, agreed. But it's hard to know. And everybody, you know, everybody got, you know, got refunded there.
He was 52 to 1.
Yeah.
We swallowed that punishment fairly easily.
Anejo, the $15 winner there for Doug.
But anyway. He was an overlay, and I threw that in the show.
Yep.
I actually bet a little on him because I thought he was too big a price.
And we should also throw in the Athena result, Andy. I know shortish field and an even money winner, but Love and Thunder.
Winner went very well. I bet the second horse. Second horse got a great ride by Eric Cancel, in all fairness, and just had everything her own way. She ran well, but the winner ran extremely well, the runner down. This time, the small field and sitting last, slow pace or not, the winner was able to stay out of trouble. And she's been an unlucky horse in a lot of ways. I mean, some of the problems have been her own, but she's been a bit of an unlucky horse. And in this case, she was able to win. She ran very well, I thought.
You know who I want to give a nod to, Andy, with this result, is Merkin Cantamarcy, who does a very good job. And what a savvy claim this was of 80,000.
I believe he's known to his friends as Matt, by the way.
Okay. I've never had him on, and I only.
You should. He's a great guy.
I know that, and Gary's very friendly with him.
He's a really good guy.
I know. I should.
I love those guys. Yep. No question about it. He's terrific. Yeah, no. I like him a lot. Nate's done a great job with Evie Jens. No question about it. Well, Tony did a good job, but she's done really well for him. So I agree. Yeah.
Well, and getting grade three black type for this filly makes her, you know, that much more valuable. She's a twirling candy, and that's a big
more valuable if she had finished first too. So there's that.
Yes, that
I did not become more valuable if she ran second.
That's pretty good. And the two we should also mention the two state bred winners from the weekend. I don't want to leave them out. By the way, from Sunday. This train to Artemis, the former Ramsey horse, I think has now won like what, three straight or four straight?
She won her last straight race in a row in the scheme. She won her third race in a row.
In a row.
We should probably mention Kamari actually because she was probably the star of the weekend.
Go ahead, Kamari.
She was terrific. I mean, Lay Rocket ran really well. She just ate her up. Ran a 106 buyer. She's now run two consecutive big figures, and I see Wesley is toying with the idea of running in the Breeders' Cup Sprint over the Breeders' Cup Distaff because it's 7 furlongs. And if he's really serious with it, he's taking that Jackie's Warrior instead of the group in the Breeders' Cup Philly and Mare Sprint, he's really nuts. So, he may be taking a wait-and-see approach to what happens to Jackie's Warrior. And there's other horses besides Jackie's Warrior. Now we'll see who runs 6 furlongs. I mean, I won't be surprised if Jack Christopher runs in there, right?
Makes sense.
Imagine those connections are going to want to run him in a Breeders' Cup race, and he's probably more suited to 6 furlongs in that race than a mile in the two-turn race. So I expect him to hopefully run the sprint. So I imagine that we'll see Kamari against the Phillies. And listen, Good Night Olive ran very well, but she's been very impressed in her last two races, Kamari. And it's interesting. This has actually been a big year for her. She would make her sixth start in the Breeders' Cup this year. And I mean, a kid, but it's only her 17th lifetime start. She's a 5-year-old, right? So she's having her biggest year, and she's really running very, very well. She's the best form of her life by far. I think we'll probably see her in the Philly and Mare Distaff, given the presence of some this is, last year might have been a decent year. There may have been years where it was a decent idea to run in the regular sprint six. This year probably isn't that year. But we'll see.
Well, and she's got seven furlong form, right?
Yeah, I assume. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it's not like Jackie's Warrior is a lot faster than she is. Jackie's Warrior is a very, very good horse, and it's an exceptional consistency is really, really remarkable. Having said that, he's not in the conversation of these super fast sprinters that we've seen in past years. He's sort of a consistent 105 to 108 fire type horse, right? He wasn't beating
Yes.
Group.
Yes.
I have to go to the dentist.
You got to go to the dentist? All right.
Yeah. All right, we're done.
What do we got? I think so. What do we got to look forward to this week?
After the dentist? I don't like to look beyond a dentist appointment because you never know what could happen in a dentist's office.
Is it safe?
There's a couple of very good 2-year-old New York bred races on.
We talked about
New York bred maiden races on Thursday.
We talked about him with Steve Asmussen.
Yeah, I thought he was live in both of them. I picked him in the first. He drew the rail in both. I picked him in the first.
Good, because he says that horse, if the horse breaks, won't lose.
Yeah, I picked the horse in the first division. The second division is the one with a bigger pedigree, right? It's a Highway Star who made $1 million.
But
that
needs
horse,
yes.
I don't remember where I picked that horse.
He thought that
was interesting.
Well, then it sounds like you did the right thing because Steve said he thinks that horse needs one.
Okay. Wow. Look at you. Wow. Getting Steve Aston to talk about two-year-old New York bred firsters on your show. You're the greatest.
You have no idea.
America's greatest asset to horse racing. All right.
You're going to the dentist. Nobody can drill. You haven't showered yet?
No.
You're a
slug. The dentist is right across the street from St. Patrick's Cathedral. I can get in the shower. I'm little, so it doesn't take me long in there. I don't have to shave. And I can jump on the subway down the street. I'll be there plenty of time. See you later.
Andy Serling, everybody. Always a treat. Oh, my God. The best. The best. The best. Thank you. I was going to make a parallel. Because Andy going to the dentist, I said, well, nobody, you know, and he said the nice things about the visit with Steve. But I was going to say, you know, nobody can drill for information from Steve like I can. No, you get him talking. The secret to Steve is just to just get him going. Just get him warmed up. As long as he's not in a rush, sometimes he's on the shank. There's been plenty of conversations where you can hear that he's walking a horse. I should ask him about that. You know, it's amazing when you occasionally put on the TV and you pick up whatever Retama and Remington and Lone Star, Sam Houston. And they're showing horses walking in the paddock, and there's Asmussen. It's a Wednesday night, and he is in Oklahoma or Texas, and he's walking a horse. It's amazing. I mean, it's one thing when you see him at where were we the other day? At Churchill with Echo again. Ooh, I did. That was something I didn't bring up. Now I'm just realizing I forgot to bring up Echo again, okay. That might have turned the conversation in a different direction, because having been at Churchill a week ago Saturday, it was not in a great mood. Yeah, that was things did not go great. Let's put it that way. So. Well, yeah, I guess sometimes you you forget. Sometimes you forget, you know, just because there's too much to talk about. Other times you forget because, you know that it's not necessarily something that. But I did actually simply forgot about that, or I didn't notice it on the list of. You know, the recent with Steve, sometimes it's hard because if you go look at a recent list of starters and you go look at the formulator, you know, the page, you know, pull up entries and, you know, a race like that is already way down the page from even from 10 days ago, just because, you know, he sends out so many starters. We're going to do something, though. Papo is stuck in a meeting, so Papo begged off until tomorrow, which is fine because we can get some. We'll look at some. Maybe you know what? With Essen Aboya, Nick. The fact that Nick Tamaro, I saw that, you know, I retweeted yesterday that Nick was alerting people, you know, to don't miss the opportunity for the pick five carryover at Assiniboia, which is going to get forced out tomorrow. I just asked Nick earlier, I said, are you looking at that? Have you looked at it yet? And he's going to have it. Nick is going to go through it. So we'll get, and I haven't talked to Nick in 3 weeks. So we'll get Nick Tamaro in here, and Nick's going to look at the Assiniboia. And there was something else that I was going to bring up with that. God, I hate that. I can't remember what the other part of this. There was a part A and a part B that was that direction. Let's be honest. We've been kind of plowing through here at a rapid rate today. So anyway, no Papo. But what we are going to do is a conversation with a young horseman who I wanted to get on after Kentucky Downs. And I'm sort of glad that the occasion arose that I just couldn't get to him with everything that was going on. But Whit Beckman is going to join us. And Whit had a winner on the Tuesday, that Tuesday card that was the rescheduled Sunday racing at Kentucky Downs. And then he came back the other day at Churchill with a winner. So perfect, actually, because we can talk about, you know, more than just the maiden winner, the two-year-old Sabalenka, who did go off favored. And, of course, I'm delighted to have a win picture because I was with Joe Vellante, and this was the Legion Bloodstock and Legion Racing horse. And you may have seen that. See, that was what? That was Tuesday after. Yes, that was Tuesday after the second day broadcasting at Keeneland. And I then after a little bit headed back to Kentucky Downs, and Whit wins that nightcap with Sabalenka. And then on Thursday, it just so happens, I mentioned, I really haven't talked about this nearly enough. On Thursday, was invited to the Mill Ridge party. And I, again, thank Heedley, Bell, and Price, and everybody at Mill Ridge. That was delightful. Got a chance to see Doc Chandler. And was with Sid Fernando and Francis Caron, and then with the Legion Bloodstock team. And I put up that picture of the entire group with Travis and his wife and Christian Valenti and the whole. They really had an absolutely fabulous time. Evan Cianello, and here's Whit Beckman, who is a big part of what's going on when the Legion guys hang on to a horse and send it out to race. And Whit, I promised I wanted to get you on, and this is a perfect opportunity because you also had a win over the weekend at Churchill. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Not at all. And a lot of people are going to hear Witt for the first time, and they've seen him. I mean, they've been seeing him for years because he's got about as great a resume. And before he went out on his own, and we'll go through it. We'll go through his background. And for those of you that are aspiring young horse trainers, Witt has done it right. And in fact, you know what? Before we talk about the horses, let's talk about you and growing up and your interest in the game. When did it start? Give us the Witt Beckman story.
A quick recap of the Witt Beckman story. I mean, I grew up here in Louisville, kind of in an equine family. My dad's an equine vet. You know, my mom's always had, you know, show horses. We weren't really involved with racing per se, but my dad, he does a lot of repro work. So one of his biggest clients was Ups and Downs. It's Alex Rankin's farm.
Oh, wow.
Spent a lot of time out there as a child, yeah, and just around horses a lot, but didn't really show much. I mean, I didn't really realize this is what I was going to be doing. It was kind of an Acres of Diamonds scenario where I went out looking for what I wanted to do and found out that it was right here under my nose the whole time.
I love it. So, and how'd you break in?
So I just, there's a local guy here that we have family friends with named Walter Bender. He's been a staple around
sure.
the Kentucky Circuit Fairgrounds for years, and he gave me my first, you know, opportunity on the racetrack. Started there probably 2003-ish. Worked with him a couple years and did some work on some farms as well. Went and actually worked at Ups and Downs and just got as much kind of just saturation working with horses as I could. And then eventually kind of got on with, actually worked with Darley and getting some of their younger horses ready for a bit, and then ended up with Todd. And that was around 2006. And the rest from there is kind of, you know, just, we stayed with him 6.5 years, went to Saudi, trained over there for a little while, and then worked with Owen Hardy for a little while in the meantime, and then Chad Brown, and here we are.
So a real variety of you know, different kinds of horses and operations in you know, many areas. You give us a feel for what you took away, the different, you know, the different methods and, you know, how you more or less weave all these, you know, threads of straw into
right.
your own horsemanship.
Right. I mean, fundamentally, I think everybody's more or less, we're doing the same thing. You know, you have horses and you need to get them fit, you need to keep them healthy, happy, you know, sound. Those are all the, you know, the pillars upon which everybody kind of designs their systems around. But I think for me, the common thread that runs through all of the jobs I had was just how well you take care of the horses and how well, you know, you stay attentive to details. And that comes from, you know, the staff you have around them to the medication you use with them, but just everything. You know, obviously Todd and Chad were just such, you know, constant professionals and were just so in tune with what their horses needed, you know, at every stage of their development and obviously spotting them and getting them in the right places. And there's just, and, you know, beyond that too is running a successful business, which is, you know, something that I think can be overlooked just when you get so caught up with the training aspect, because the training is obviously the most important part, but we also have to have a solid, you know, business structure to, you know, maintain and recruit more horses and,
mm-hmm.
you know, better owners.
Well, and then there's, you know, the whole, as we've learned, given the onerous labor departments and you know, the intricacies of, you know, of the business in general, and, you know, mm-hmm. some of its antique stylings when it comes to, you know, the business practices and,
right.
you know, being, you know, being savvy enough and, you know, taking note. I mean, certainly the biggest outfits in the game have fallen afoul of, you know, some of these,
right.
hourly wage rulings and they've, you know, they've put a hurt. I mean, financially, it's been, you know, it's a danger, especially if you're just starting out.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think early on, what I, you know, you take into account, you know, that one of the trickiest part is, you know, keeping a, you know, good staff and keeping them, you know, happy and just, getting good people and everything, but I think even more so nowadays, it's been one of the trickiest aspects that I faced in this first year is just getting that consistency of help and trying to find, you know, the right people that kind of mesh with how I am, my personality, and how I want things done. But, you know, as we just do this longer, I think, you know, for me, there's been a lot of learning curves that I've kind of come to, which, you know, with all the experience I've had with, you know, the bigger outfits, I've seen so much variety insofar as what can happen or what you're trying to prevent from happening. So I feel like I've got some amount of, you know, I feel like I'm some of the way there, but there's so much more to go. You know, I just got so much more to learn and so many more things to, you know, try on and see what works for us in our outfit, our stable.
Well, and that leads us to where we are and these recent successes. And certainly your association with Legion is very notable to me, Whit, because they're a, you know, I called them on Twitter hard chargers. I mean, these are young people in the game, and they've got tentacles out in a lot of directions, and obviously great experience and a division of responsibilities for all the personalities involved. You know, talk about working with them and then, you know, and essentially bringing clients in and courting people to, you know, give you horses, you know, the kinds of horses that will help you make your mark.
Right. So I've known, I guess, one of the, you know, primary buyers there, Christian Vellante. He's, you know, big player there in Legion. I've known him. We worked together with Todd Pletcher back, it's been, you know, 10, 15 years ago now. And that's kind of how I got to know him. But I've known a lot of the guys that are involved with that for a long time. And they've just always been, you know, close. We're kind of younger guys that have all come up through the ranks together. You know, we weren't all always in the position we're at now. So just knowing them and them knowing me and knowing what I'm about with my training and what I'm looking to do, and obviously just taking the game and helping me, giving me some of these horses, especially starting out, it's just been, you know, I mean, a huge boost for my own confidence, but also just moving forward with some of the, you know, nicer horses that we've got for them.
Talk about some of the other clients that you've
so yeah, I think for. Yeah, I've got, you know, a good solid group that I've had pretty much since I went on my own. These are people that I've known for quite a while. I can't say I had a huge list of clients that were, you know, willing to throw horses at me, but I did have a small group that were, you know, like I said, people that know me, that trust me, that know exactly what my, you know, resume was and, you know, what I'm going to, you know, obviously want to do, what my, you know, goals are with their horses. Alex Rankin has probably been one of our biggest supporters. He's, you know, a local breeder. He's bred a lot of nice horses at their farm ups and downs over the years, and I've got a couple nice 2-year-olds for him and his partner Louis Wright, and then just a couple other. Philly had one for the other day, a bloodstock agent named Tim Valerio, who's bought a lot of nice horses over the years. Scat Daddy be one of them. She had a filly that she sent me, and like I said, she's just one. We were allowed to, you know, just stay patient with and take our time, and, you know, she won impressively for us the other day, and we're just trying to build off that. And with the, you know, got a couple other really good clients that are, you know, supporting me and hopefully be buying some more horses and sending them on next year.
You bring up Kim Valerio. We know Kim very well, and saw her tromping the hill at Keeneland, and yeah. And Kim was helpful, helped us pick out our nice filly that actually ended up getting hurt, but our broodmare that Voltairine, and. She does have, you know, you mentioned Scat Daddy, but she's got a long history of success.
Oh, yeah, long. There's a huge list there. I can't, yeah, on the spot, I can't think of it.
Well, Music Street, and this came on Sunday, and it sort of lit a fire under me. I said, well, I promised to win. I was getting them on, and here it is. This is a 3-year-old, actually, not a 2-year-old filly, mm-hmm. And yep. A street sense that... it seems like there's still plenty of upside.
Yeah, I think so. She just kind of, for me, she was a later maturing horse, and just especially early on in the spring, she was, I mean, the ability we thought was there, but just always kind of a lack of focus. Some of these mares just take a little longer to figure it out. And we didn't really take it too hard on her through the summer, just kind of gave her an easier summer, did not run her until July and August. So just kind of came into this Churchill spot where that was our goal, really, to kind of get back one of these, big purse maidens at Churchill. And everything just worked out perfectly for it. You know, she had a great summer. Her last couple works had just been outstanding. And, yeah, the race came up, the right way. It's one of those things. It was originally supposed to be a mile and a quarter maiden, and it came back a few days. Finally, it was a mile and an eighth, the distance I wanted. So it just, you know, stars aligned. She ended up there and showed what we've been seeing in the morning, you know.
Well, and should mention, 72 buyer in here with Julian Leperoux aboard, wins by three, and go from there. You win a mile and an eighth, and it sort of signifies what kind of a horse, you know, this is, and you know, plenty of time to take advantage. I mean, if you can win at a mile and an eighth, there's plenty of opportunities as she, you know, turns from three to four.
Three to four. I agree 100%, especially with, you know, some of these fillies, especially in that division too. It's not a loaded division, but you know, if you have a horse that can go right of ground and prove it, and I think there's, like I said, this is still a developing horse. I think hopefully we can, you know, go on to bigger and better things.
Let's talk about Sabalenka, and this is probably a two-year-old that we're going to see, I imagine, at the two-year-old turf stake in Keeneland. Goes favored, and that's not necessarily what anybody wants to see when they open the gates at Kentucky Downs. You don't necessarily want to be favored.
Yeah, it was one of those things. It was kind of a lukewarm, and watching the board there, you know, it was like 7-2, 9. She was all over. So when they did open me, she was favored, but she, you know, we knew she's a nice filly. We knew she, she'd always trained like she wanted to, you know, be a decent turf horse. So I was confident she was going to run well. I just so happened. I think that was the first time that I was the favorite. I'm glad she won.
That's funny. This ended up, it looked like she was going to, you know, march on by, and the runner-up, Safine, but the two of them.
Yeah, that filly ran a tremendous race, filly from the inside there.
Exactly, and, the two of them were, half a dozen back to the rest of that field, which typically is a good sign.
Yeah, it was good to see the two of them kick clear. I was, like I said, very impressed with I think it was a Warfront filly, but yeah, our filly, she hung tough. She had a wide trip. I mean, that Kentucky Downs course is not easy. I've had a couple of horses I sent down, especially they just, you know, didn't really pick their feet up. It's not, you know, especially from the traditional style of training and racing here and then going to there. It takes a horse, a special kind of horse.
Well, how's she come out of it since? And this is a Legion horse. Was this a horse that they pin hooked, or was this a horse that they intended to race from whatever point?
My understanding is that she was bought at OBS June, and kind of when I got her, they said just, you know, train her as you'd want. There's no, you know, deadline on this. There's not any plan to sell or do anything. We're just going to try to see what we've got. So that's, you know, what I've done. And she's, I mean, just shown us every step of the way what kind of quality she has. She's a nice filly.
Really nice. In addition, and really, you've spread. you're certainly showing people that you can win in a variety of places. Because not only was there the Churchill win on Sunday and the Kentucky Downs when I was there, but Solid Tune, a winner at Indy during August.
Yeah, I think, you know, staying in Kentucky for the summer, for me, it's great because I'm from here, my family's here, my daughter, and there's so much upside to me wanting to stay here. But what I am finding, it is tricky. You do a lot of shipping, and you're relying on, especially with the weather here, you know, in this area during the summer, a lot of rain, a lot of just quick storms that'll come through and, you know, take races off the grass, and you're scratching, and you're traveling a lot, so you know, you got to have the staff to support it, to move around, and everybody's just, especially as a small stable with not the huge infrastructure yet to support a ton of, you know, shipping and, you know, racing returns out of state. But, you know, everybody's done an incredible job, and I'm really proud of just the staff and the horses, especially just handling, you know, traveling from spot to spot and not being able to run out of their stall. So.
Well, and talk a little bit about the plan, because, you know, in addition to the winner at Indy, you also had a winner earlier in the year. In fact, you know, you had, waited a little bit between that Turfway win right at the beginning, waywardness. You had a little bit of a protracted, not that you sent out a ton of starters, but you had to wait a little bit for that next winner.
Yeah, every inch, should I've realized, Trainer, every inch you get around here is a hard-earned inch, you know. So I think coming out of the winter, it was a really rough winter. I was new. We stayed. I was split up, actually, between Turfway and a training center in LaGrange. And there was just a lot of challenges that we faced with just gaining consistency in training. so by the time, you know, we rolled into Keeneland and kind of coming out of the winter, I feel like I was probably a little far back and probably made some just errors in where, you know, running in those top meets is just, it was tough for a lot of these horses. Now getting kind of the point where we've been training consistently all spring, all summer at the same racetrack, you know, it just makes it a lot easier to kind of identify where you're at with some of the horses, you know, and obviously working with Todd and Chad, we had a lot of experience with top level horses. So, you know, the harsh reality of things is you're going to come and start training and, you know, the horses are not going to be as good as your, you know, lens might have been focused on. So I think kind of just getting back and, you know, understanding that this, you know, there's so much more to just spotting good horses. You got to really, you know, focus in on these horses that are not going to be stakes winners, you know.
Well, sure. And, you know, waywardness at the $15,000 level and the first winner, I think the first winner of your career, which came right near the end of the year at Turfway. There it is, Irrepressible.
Irrepressible, yeah.
Irrepressible 7-1 and got taken away. That's got to be a little tough to have your first winner and see him hang a number on.
We kind of knew it was actually a situation where she wasn't claimed to race. She was actually claimed to breed by the original breeder. So it really kind of softened it, you know.
No, that's nice.
They were there to pick her up and they were taking her to the farm. It was one of those things you can kind of feel good about, you know, moving on. She was, I mean, a beautiful, very expensive purchase in the Mischief, beautiful pedigree. Just so, you know, it on the one hand, you'd like to keep them to run them back. But on the other hand, if you're going to lose them a certain way, that's, you know, I was fine with it.
There you go. Now I see that. That's interesting. And that was for owner Joe Grafeo.
Yep. He was the owner, and yeah, it was great. I mean, the first win, it was just, you know, it was a good feeling, you know.
No doubt. So a total of five so far, and I also see a winner. We mentioned that waywardness. Newtown Anner sent you horses.
Yeah. So their manager here in the U.S. I've been close with for many years, just through my days with Todd. And, you know, when I kind of told him I was going on my own, he said he would be happy to support me. And, you know, super grateful. It's Nick Salusto. He's big.
Sure.
Buys a lot of horses. So he's got his own thing going with Thoroughstock. And they're doing a lot of good things down in Ocala. And, you know, they got some horses all over the country running well. And, yeah, it's just been a, you know, have guys like that that are, you know, helping me out, giving me those early shots is what, you know, what I relied on.
Well, a couple of things then to talk about. How many do you have right now? And how interested are you in having a bigger barn? Or is it one of those things that you'll let the size and the shape basically move on its own volition?
Right. I think for right now, I'm at 12 right now. I was up a little bit higher, but I've learned a couple things about holding on and just with staffing and, you know, just holding on to horses. So I'm at a number I'm very happy with right now. I think just scaling and growing in proportion to, you know, just me picking up business practices and just kind of keeping everything where I'm not getting too, you know, many horses with not enough, you know, help or whatever the case may be, because there's been, you know, so many deals like that trying to take care of everything. But I think, you know, looking forward, you know, that 30 to 40 mark, I think would be a great number. You know, I've worked in, you know, outfits where we, you know, manage just so many more horses. So I can see too many is not necessarily what I'm looking for, you know, my career path. I don't know that I ever want to be that super trainer. But, you know, I'll let things kind of develop organically and naturally. I think for right now, I'm in a great spot with the owners I've got, with the horses I've got. I'm happy with all they're doing. Obviously, I'd be happy to take on more clients. But at the, this point, you know, people are wanting to do that, come find me.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about that in a second. But what's the plan for the winter? Basically, stalls and turfway and winter at home?
It's still kind of TBD right now. The one thing I had, just wintering at Turfway last year, we just missed so much time, and I want to come out of the winter with horses that are kind of ready to compete, to kind of hit the ground running once we get back here for the spring. It was just, I realized that I was so far behind, and, you know, you feel still have the pressure to run, and you try to kind of, you know, make excuses why you're in a better spot than you are. So I think I'm considering taking some horses down south, you know, Louisiana or Tampa, something like that, just a place where I can winter and just continue with consistency of training. You know, it's the one thing working, you know, with a lot of the guys I have, we trained every day, and that's how I want to do things. I don't want to be, you know, stuck waiting for the snow to clear or the track to thaw or, you know, any of the other, you know, things you have to deal with while you're, you know, in a true winter environment. So that's still, like I said, trying to figure that out. Like, kind of some of these horses we're going to run at Keeneland and Churchill November kind of dictate where they might want to go. But for right now, we're kind of split between what we want to do.
Interesting. And another aspect is that drive from Louisville to Florence on ice covered roads. Nobody relishes that trip.
Yeah, I had a few slippery moments last year. I definitely that got old real fast.
Yeah, well, one thing, you know, when you're making that run up and down 71, and you get to that sign about halfway, you know, site of fatal bus accident, May 14th, 1988. That'll sober you up real quick about zipping around up and down between the Ville and
I do a lot of driving, and between, like, you know, the roads in and out of Louisville, east west 64 to Lexington is an easy drive. Going from Louisville to, say, Ellis Park, that's an easy drive. Going from Louisville to Kentucky Downs, that's an easy drive. But going from Louisville to Florence, to Turfway, that's not an easy drive.
No.
It's unattractive trailers, it's a windy road. Just whatever reason, there's always a lot of traffic and accidents. I don't know. Yeah. Not my favorite deal.
Well, then there's the whole matter of the abandoned car. And is it me, or are there more abandoned cars, particularly around Louisville, cars that feel like they've been sitting there? I mean, I was just back, you know, 2 weeks ago, and I swear there were cars I saw Derby week that are still sitting on the Waterson.
Yeah, there's still quite a few over there. I don't know how long they've been, but yeah, I grew up, if I don't pay attention anymore, you know.
It's the crazy. I've never seen so many cars just sitting there.
It couldn't
be in
Saudi. It's way worse. They would just, as soon as something breaks down, they just leave it on the side of the road.
That is funny. Talk about that experience. Actually, we got a couple of minutes. I might as well keep you here at this point. Whit, for those listening, Whit Beckman is with us. And by the way, am I wrong, or are you not? Do you not have a Twitter presence?
I don't have any social media presence per se. It's just one of those things I never really got myself into. And I mean, obviously, I think maybe at one point my sister, she is kind of my business partner, helps me with all my, you know, accounting, bookkeeping, just ordering, stuff like that. But she's been kind of pushing me to try to at least get something out on the, you know, internet, whatever, Instagram or Facebook. But at this point, it's just not my, I wouldn't even, the only thing I would probably post is pictures of the sunrises in the morning. I think that's the only thing I have the presence of mind to really pay attention to.
Well, you and Sean Clancy. Yeah. Sean Clancy is very big with farm art, as he calls
it.
Yeah,
well, you see a lot of beautiful sunrises, you know, so you just got to take that into one thing about getting up early.
Talk about the Middle Eastern experience and what I mean. You know, there's just too many successful horsemen with that. You know, that we see operating that had their turn there, including Kieran, of course, You think about Brendan Walsh. You mentioned Owen Hardy. You know, talk about what that does for you.
Yeah, I think so. I went to Saudi Arabia. All those guys were, you know, kind of in Dubai with the, you know, Godolphin yes. and Darley. But Saudi, it came at a time. So I'd worked for Todd for quite a few years, and I just, you know, the offer came, and I was just looking for something to kind of shake things up, and I thought it would be a decent opportunity, and it definitely was. I'm glad I did it experientially because it showed me, I mean, so many things that I just never would have ever grasped, you know, stateside here, especially. We just have things so much, you know, just more insulated and set up. There's just, you have a person for everything, you know. Over there, you don't have a lot of the, like, accommodator, you know, amenities that we have here with, you know, say, like, our blacksmiths and how knowledgeable they are, or vets and how knowledgeable they are, or just supplies. You had to go out and get all your own stuff. There was feed and mixing my own feed, just, water had to be delivered daily. There was days I didn't have water, you know, and there were so many challenges that came from things I just never thought I was going to have to deal with. They kind of, you know, they just toughen you up. They kind of just thicken your skin. And then when you do come back, you're, you know, able to, I think, handle a lot more of the little things that are out of your control and just, you know, make them less daunting, turn the mountains into molehills rather than molehills into mountains, you know, just kind of look at it a more level head.
Interesting.
But
yeah,
it was a great experience. Like I said, I actually went back twice for two separate owners, and enjoyed mild success the first time. Like, so it was very challenging. I could just start rattling off things that were, you know, obstacles in my way, but we'd be here for way too long. Ultimately, I ended up staying, yeah, for a year the first time, you know, won some races and learned a ton about, you know, what it is to really go out on your own and to be faced with, you know, just none of the modern, you know, things that we have here in the U.S. I kind of leave it at that. But it was pretty brutal over there as well. There were some things that I just couldn't wrap my head around and, you know, won't get into, but it was wild.
Understood. No, understood. Interesting. I'm glad I asked. Yeah. Whit Beckman with us. Whit, what about the horses coming up at Horseshoe tomorrow? Truly Mischief in the fifth tomorrow.
Yeah, so this horse, he's always been a very high energy, always trained very well. I've always had him nailed. He's a turf horse. We ran him poly first out, and we ran him at Kentucky Downs last time, and he did not pick up his feet. He didn't do any running. So I'm hoping that was just, you know, the lay of the land. He's one that does, you know, need a little bit more of that habitual type of a routine. You know, he's, like I said, a high energy and just kind of a little bit nervous disposition. So I think just going down there and that whole up and down, side to side, just it caught him off guard. So I'm hoping this spot tomorrow is, it's probably a tick short. I think that six and a half is probably a better distance for him, but he ran there once before. I stuck some blinkers on him. I think we'll hopefully get him a little more courage early, get him in the race, and I'm, you know, optimistic he's going to run very well.
Well, and I don't blame you for bringing this one to Kentucky Downs, because that sibling of Mrs. Weber's, Super
right.
Dormy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was okay. Was the stakes placed? I think at Kentucky Downs.
I believe so. Yeah, second in there or something. Yeah.
So
it made sense.
Full, that's a
you
full
know, like
too.
It always does. In the distance, everything about it made a lot of sense. Just the horse didn't agree with us.
Well, and sometimes, in fact, this came up with Steve Asmussen earlier. Asmussen had that route. The horse's name is Route Runner, who is a big 2-year-old, a big, I called him a galoot. And Steve said he's a big, scared horse that coming down that hill, he was all tentative. And then once he got to level ground, he started to run. And so they don't want to fall. I've explained this to people 1,000 times.
100%, yep.
That's their biggest fear in life.
Every step of the way. Yeah, every step of the way. They know when they're, you know, overextending or they're not going to extend. They are, you know, more in tune with how, you know, their safety than we could ever be.
Yep, and because we've explained this, they're flight animals, and their biggest risk in the wild is falling down where a mountain lion will pounce on them. That's when they're vulnerable. So for those that don't understand the difference between the three surfaces, and if the horse inexplicably doesn't run, it's because they don't like the footing, and they're tentative, and they're not going to extend, and, you know, take four off the ground on a surface that they're like, what am I running on? And this is no good.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, with those purses and everything about it, you take your chances. But when they kind of tell you, then you can go back to the what we know works, and it's, you know, typical standard oval, and hopefully get back to what his form was prior to that Kentucky Downs race.
There you go. Joe Ramos is riding, and in addition to Truly Mischief in the fifth, you got a maiden claimer, Buckeye Jimmy, goes in the seventh.
Yeah, Buckeye Jimmy. So he's been kind of a hard luck horse. He's just one of these ones. I think this horse has had to scratch off the grass now probably four or five times in the last couple months.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, like I said, Kentucky and between Ellis Park and Indiana, they just get one cell, one thunderstorm that comes through day before, the day of, or whatever the case is. And, you know, it's like rain in the forecast every single day through July. And, you know, maybe most years it's a little drier, but this year was not. It was extremely wet July and didn't change much in August. So, yeah, we ended up scratching a lot, but he's had like 1,000 breezes. So we'll see how he handles it. I had to run him on the on the dirt first out. He's never been a dirt type, but with Churchill's grass kind of ending early there, we just were kind of forced into making that first start on the dirt, which wasn't ideal. And then it's just been really difficult to get him into a spot since.
Well, he certainly belongs on the grass. He's out of an Archmare, and he's by looking at Lucky. We've got we had our recently retired Kid Chocolate, who's looking at Lucky, and he was 100% a turf horse. And there's a sibling going back a few years, the Regal Ransom filly, Bonnie Arch, and she was a stake winner. She won the Ellis Park turf, so there's plenty, and was third at Kentucky Downs herself, actually, in the ladies' turf. So Bonnie Arch, her half-sister, his half-sister, showed plenty of turf ability, so it makes sense.
Right. So, yeah, we'll hope. I think it's mile and 16. I feel like the horse probably wants a little more ground, but we'll get him started here and just kind of see where we're at. Going into after tomorrow's race.
Well, Joe Ramos aboard for this as well, and Whit absolutely was looking forward to this conversation. Wanted to introduce you to probably some players that may have seen the name in the program if they're watching the Kentucky circuit, and they're going to see it for a long time. Just absolutely delighted. I want to be able to tell people to look for Whit Beckman on Twitter, but until there is Whit Beckman on Twitter, we can't do that.
When I actually have something to say, I'll get on Twitter. But for right now, I'm just focused on just kind of building a stable with decent horses, a good staff, and just really making this this is the lifestyle, this is the career I've chosen. And for right now, I wanted the horses to do more of the talking, and we're learning what we're doing wrong, and we're trying to focus on what we're doing right, and just keep hard at it, because at the end of the day, the one thing I do know what to do, know how to do, is train horses, and the rest I think will put us up together from there.
Well, if anybody wants to get in touch with Whit and want to talk to him about sending him a horse, get in touch with me or the Legion Bloodstock team,
BeckmanRacingStables.com.
Oh, there you go. You didn't say that. BeckmanRacingStables.com.
BeckmanRacingStable@gmail.com. I don't have. We have the domain, but I don't have the website yet.
Unbelievable. All right, we're gonna get all these mutual friends between Evan and Christian and Joe. We're gonna put the spurs to you. Remember him as the trainer with the name you would see on Yellowstone. Whitworth Beckman. Whit Beckman, continued success. Thanks so much for this.
Nice, Steve. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Whit Beckman. I love it. What a fun morning this was, and it flew by. My God. We're done, right? Yeah, it's 8. I got to go. 58. good luck if you're playing today, everybody. I want to thank Steve Asmussen, Kenny McPeak, C.R. Trout, and Whit Beckman and Andy Serling for a vintage Andy Serling visit. They're all vintage. Back tomorrow, we're going to do some Assiniboia. We'll get you into that pick five. Nick's going to come visit. We got to catch up with the team at Indy. Haven't talked to John Dooley in forever. I don't want to bring up. There's this. I guess there's this auction at Arlington. Ugh. Yeah, I know. I've also got to give you some more results that I haven't gotten to yet, like what went on at there were those four stakes at Pimlico. They're switching over, right? I think we're over to Laurel this week. Thanks, everybody. Hope you enjoyed. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, and I'll talk to you at 9 a.m. Thanks.
At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.